You're listening to the EBITDA Growth Systems Making Business Profitable podcast with profitability experts Dave Kapkowitz and Mike Watkins.
Coming at you from 5,675 feet in lovely Golden, Colorado. My name is Dave Kapkowitz, and I'm here with Michael Watkins, living our mission statement to impact lives through improving business performance. We accomplish this by coaching, speaking, and educating so you can live your best life.
Good day, Dave.
Good day, Michael.
How are you, brother?
I'm good. What's shaking?
I think you and I are shaken. We're shaken. This expansion is happening fast. I mean, what has happened to us since our last podcast, I think?
We've done a little bit of growing.
Yeah. We've two new coaches. These are guys that we know, mm-hmm. and tremendous background. And so excited to have them on board. And then we brought on a fractional resource for our accounting team as well. A young lady, just a delightful young lady.
Yeah, young little CPA, and
young
comes
CPA.
comes from a grinding background, you know. So
yeah,
it's solid ads. Three solid ads, that's for sure.
Yeah, so you know, with all this talent that we're bringing on board, and we subscribe to, hey, let's make sure we bring on people who are as good or better than us. How come we're still drinking water from a fire hose?
We're dedicated to impacting as many people as we can.
That, and you're up to your eyeballs in M&A activity.
Yeah, $500 million is a nice number.
Yeah.
But it keeps us busy. We don't have I don't wake up in the morning looking for something to do anymore.
I wake up in the morning wondering why we worked out last night. Because I am so sore, I can't even stand up straight.
Yeah, it's, well, Fiona, I swear she's trying to kill us.
Well, that smirk on her face might indicate that she is.
I think she enjoys it when we're hurting. So,
well, what are we going to talk about
there's
today?
There's more to that, I'll tell you that. I don't know. Oh, what's the schedule of our discussion? I don't understand.
Yeah, schedule. That's become a hot topic for us. I mean, it seems to be an issue with most of the companies that we encounter.
So many people don't schedule.
Yeah.
It blows me away.
Now, did you schedule when you ran your shop?
Of course I schedule. Yeah. It's, you have to schedule. I ran a... It wasn't very sophisticated, though. Once I sold my shop and I joined corporate America, let's say, the scheduling I got involved with was much more sophisticated.
Yeah,
so,
but to your point, you know, if you have a small to medium-sized shop, you know, less than $10 million, it doesn't have to be that sophisticated, right?
No, but I mean, I kind of had my backlog report and had a list of my jobs and their due dates according to machine, and that's about as sophisticated as I got in my shop. You know, then I got to work groups and work centers and stages instead of I always used to schedule according to the due date instead of the start date. Then as I matured as a manager, I started scheduling from when something had to start versus when it had to finish. And then I got really good at building in efficiencies and utilization into my schedule, so I knew when something was going to happen. If it didn't, I knew why. And if it didn't happen, I had room in my schedule to where I could still hit my due date. So, I mean, that was just maturity on my part.
So what's the burning platform for scheduling? I mean, if you know, someone says...
Money.
Yeah.
Money. If you don't want to schedule, you don't want to make a lot of money. If you don't want to schedule, you don't want efficiency. If you don't want to schedule, you don't like accountability. If you don't want to schedule, you don't want to be organized. If you don't want to schedule, you don't care telling someone you're going to be late. I mean, those are all in your face statements, but they're all true.
Sure. I mean, how do you have a productive workforce?
You don't.
If it's ad hoc like that.
If it's ad hoc, you can say, well, all my people, they work really hard. Well, yeah, but are they efficient? And how can you show me that they're efficient if you don't have a schedule?
Right, right.
I mean, it's one of those, it's a real discussion. I mean, if you're serious about making sure that you're serving your customer at the highest level and you're really serious about quality, then having a good schedule is imperative. If you don't have a good schedule, then you're in trouble.
Well, one of the things that I've seen is we have a handful of clients that do have schedules, and they operate from with a scheduling function. And when one of their clients says, "Hey, I really need this in 3 days," they have learned that you tune them up. You say, "Sure, we can give you that in 3 days, but it's going to cost you this."
Yeah, there's a multiplier there.
Yeah, but you can't do that if you don't have a schedule. I guess you can.
You can, but it's all flying by the seat of your pants.
Sure.
You're just adding a number. You don't know why you're adding a number, but you're like, this is what I think the market's going to bear, so I'm just going to throw it on there and hope they take it.
That's best case scenario. We see a lot of companies who say, yeah, I'll get it to you
sure,
in 10 days.
Sure, I can
do it. You're our favorite customer, mm-hmm. and they don't even charge
you're
them more
friend.
Money. You're my friend. Yeah, yeah. So what about on-time delivery, which is a problem in our industry, and we leave money on the table when we have on-time delivery issues?
Oh, yeah, if you don't deliver, you got to be cheap. Otherwise, you don't get the work.
Right.
I mean, quality is something you have to have, right? So if you're late all the time, the only way you get work is to be cheap. That's the only way to win, because it isn't because you're getting it to them on time.
Right, right, right.
So, I mean, it's one or the other. Either you're going to make parts on time and you're going to make a little bit of money at it and be able to hold a at or above market pricing because you're delivering quickly you always do what you say you're going to do.
Yes.
Or you lie consistently by being late. Yes, that makes you a liar. And you have to be cheap because it's the only thing that makes you attractive.
And you, to use your term, you almost have to lie if you don't have a schedule because you have no idea.
Well, you're just guessing. You're just making an educated guess without any process.
Yeah.
Basically, it's totally ad hoc.
Well, is it because, ERP systems don't do scheduling well, or?
Well, I mean, you could say ERP systems are bad at scheduling, but the only way that's true is if you aren't wedded to your ERP system and you don't use it 100%. There are ERP systems that schedule very poorly. There are ERP systems that schedule pretty well. Nobody's perfect. Anybody that says they're perfect, even the ones that are near and dear friends of mine, they know they're not perfect because they're always investing in making everything a little bit better, right?
Sure, sure.
But what I found is if you lean into your ERP system 100%, you learn their scheduling and you use it. Because it's junk in, junk out. You've heard that a million times,
yep,
right?
Yep, yep.
But if you use a scheduling system and you're wedded to it and you really make an effort to learn how it works and you use it the way it's intended to be used, you can get by with a good schedule using an ERP system. It's unfortunate 95% of people export to Excel and they maneuver the numbers in Excel and they schedule that way, which can be effective. I'm not saying it's not effective. When I was an Epicor guy and we exported everything to Excel and we linked it back to Epicor to had a good refresh rate and we ran everything for work group and work resource and the order it needed to start and we nailed it, right? We just nailed it. We were always on time.
Who's the consumer of this schedule?
What do you mean, who's the consumer?
Like who's using it? I mean, certainly, the scheduler is going to put the schedule together, but, I mean, who else has to come alongside and be a consumer of that schedule?
Well, you have to have sales, you have to have operations, you have to have quality, and all your if you have internal secondary operations, everybody has to be lock and step with the schedule. So when a scheduler is building something, he or she needs to bounce ideas off of the production manager. Is this part going to run off of this over on this machine? Or is it going to run on that machine? Which machine is it going to run on? We ran over here last time. Are we going to run in the same place next time? So the production manager is going to make that decision. So if the scheduler and the production manager aren't lock in step, then you're not sure where you're putting jobs, or you're going to put them somewhere and the production manager is going to change it on you.
Gotcha.
That's that. sales has to be involved because they sometimes make promises and not communicate them.
We just saw that today.
What happens? Yeah. Every salesperson's tempted to do that because salespeople are people pleasers generally, mm-hmm. and they want to give the customer what they want because they want the next order.
Sure.
So they'll overpromise and they'll leave it to the shop to make sure they don't underdeliver. So you need sales in the room. And that's all about when you commit to the order, right? When the order comes in, sales need to say, this is what we said we could do. And that should really be worked out in the quote. But after the PO comes in, maybe it's 6 weeks after the quote's delivered.
Things have changed.
So you need that. That's that contract review, right, up front?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's when the scheduler really starts getting involved. The PO comes in, contract review, and then we confirm a delivery date. That scheduler has to sign off on a delivery date. Do we have the resources? Are we okay? Can we meet this date? And you usually have the scheduler in the room. You have the operations manager or production manager. You have the quality manager. You have the secondary ops people in the room and the salespeople in the room. And when you commit to a date, everybody commits to a date, not just the scheduler. Because if it's just in a vacuum and just a scheduler committing to the date, no one else has skin in the game.
And they don't have to own it. That's right.
Nobody has to own it. So Everybody has to own it at contract review. They have to. And then the communication has to come downstream from sales to where we know exactly what we told the customer we would do. And then production and scheduler says, yes, we can do it. And the production manager and the scheduler walk lock in step to make sure it goes through. And the quality manager, you say, why does a quality manager need to know? They need to know when they need to get it inspected. So when it hits the shelf in quality, is it hot? Is it not? Do I have time? Do I not have time? Do I slide it in front of other things? They need to know because quality people hate finding out at 3:30 in the afternoon that they have to get something done by 4.
Yeah.
When they thought they're on top of stuff. So that communication circle is so critical to make sure the schedule, it's a living, breathing organism that we all have to work on. So it's very important that everybody's wedded to the schedule, actually. But you need a point person, that being, I call them master schedulers or a scheduler.
So it's got to be someone's job.
Got to be somebody's job. Got to be somebody's job. But that always goes south when that person's in a vacuum by themselves. That person cannot, you don't want to put that everything on, all the onus on one person. It's a team. It takes the whole team to execute, not just a scheduler. Scheduler is like giving them all the responsibility without any of the power. You can't do that.
So, you know, I don't know. I'm hoping that a lot of, not just our existing clients are hearing this, but, you know, other machine shops across the nation, because it certainly, when we talk about this manufacturing renaissance and how do you make sure you get your fair share, you know, it's not haphazard. You gotta have a plan and execute that plan, and I think the schedule is a big piece of that.
Right. Well, it's say you have a schedule built. Do you build it to 100% capacity?
It would seem not, because you know, you don't have 100%.
The first day somebody in your shop has diarrhea, your schedule goes to crap. No pun intended.
That was good day.
But it's true. It's true. Soon as somebody's sick, or soon as somebody has to take a whole bunch of bathroom breaks, or soon as somebody has to step out for an errand, your schedule's no good.
So if you built it to like 80%, you always have margin.
You can guess at 80%, but I guess you kind of got to know what your shop's running at, don't you?
Yeah, that's true too.
So if your shop's running at 80%, you want to schedule at 75% efficiency. Mm-hmm. Why?
Because of what's that fellow's name?
Murphy?
Murphy.
Murphy's Law. Murphy does live in, he lives in machine shops.
Yeah.
But you know why else?
Why?
Because you're building a margin for that rust job that you can get 2 or 3x for.
Right on.
You know? When Joe's aircraft or Joe's medical place calls you and says, hey, I need this now, you can say, hey, I can get this done because I've built margin in my schedule. Yeah, we're going to have to work a little overtime, but I have margin to do this. And instead of making $4,000, you're making $12,000 on a part because they need it and they need it now.
Yeah.
Right? So in the medical industry, they had labs, and sometimes manufacturers would fall down on producing parts for the labs. Well, these doctors needs, OEMs pay hundreds of thousands of dollars for these labs. So they have a whole surgical suite full of surgeons sitting there waiting for these parts.
That's expensive, yeah.
And that's your due date. They don't build fluff into it. Your due date's the day before that.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's it. They're testing your part. So if you miss your due date, your customer could lose $250,000.
Wow.
Because those surgeons don't do anything for free. I don't know if you've been a doctor lately, but they like to, you'd figure they're trying to make a living on every surgery. But It's yep, and I meant it just like that, Docs. but it's actually, so, it's probably the hospitals and the middlemen, but anyway.
But so if you have a $4 million company and you're at, I don't know, 50% gross margin, if 25% of the time you had rush orders like that, is that like, because if 20% of the time you can get a 75% gross margin, wow.
It's hard to scale a business on rush jobs.
Okay.
Because you need heroes for it.
Yeah.
You need really high-end, high-talent individuals to flip parts really quick in many different operations. So, and that's in short supply today.
Sure it is.
So hotshot work is good. It's good for margin. But I'd argue you don't want any more than 15% of your work to be that, because it's usually disruptive. Unless you really want to go after it and you have 50% of your work is production, and that side never touches the other side of the business, which is 50% buttholes and elbows, just, hey, I'm rushing stuff through all the time.
Yeah.
Typically, you'll stress the workers out and you'll have turnover and stuff like that. And when you have turnover with high-level people, it's very difficult to replace. But if planned properly in a prototype cell and you want to keep certain people challenged and you don't overburden you can make really good money with that. I did. But I only had like four guys doing it. I didn't have six or eight. I had four. I mean, just I had a prototype cell with four people, and they did a really good job. Called it a development center. And they were able to flip jobs quickly, and I was able to make a lot of money on it. And I was able to pay those guys really
well. Sure. I mean, you got four guys, and each one of them is making you $300,000 a year in revenue.
More like $500,000 or $600,000 a year, but yeah.
Wow. So that's getting it done.
Yep. But I gave those guys... They probably had $3.5 million in machines, just those people, and all of them could run everything.
Yeah.
And they bounced in between different things. So we saw, I mean, you throw something at them and they could program it. They set it up and they run it, right? And these four guys liked to challenge. They didn't like the mundane production. If some of them went to crap in production, we needed somebody to do troubleshooting, but they could step up and do that. But I never pulled more than one guy out of there at a time to help with production, We made money that way, but it was that section of the business wasn't scheduled too much. You know, the production was scheduled.
I see.
It was first in, first out.
Gotcha.
At there. So with all that's just a way you could do it. But when it comes to scheduling, you need to be organized, you need to have everybody on the same page, and you need to execute, and then you have to hold people accountable to say what they're gonna do.
Right on, Dave.
Right on, Mike. If you'd enjoyed this podcast and you're in manufacturing and you want to learn more about what we do, go to our contact tab at ebitdagrowthsystems.com, E-B-I-T-D-A, growthsystems.com, and I'll be reaching out to you personally to see what we can do for you.
You've been listening to the EBITDA Growth Systems podcast, Making Business Profitable.